Okay, let's get started. Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Scott Schnall. I'm a senior content developer on the Exchange team at Microsoft. Among other things, I write the product documentation for Exchange Server on TechNet for areas such as high availability, site resilience, disaster recovery, and a few others. And I'm very happy to be here at Tech Days Taiwan talking today about Exchange Server 2013 and Exchange Online archiving, compliance, e-discovery, and data loss prevention. So as the title suggests, those are the areas that we're going to be talking about today. We'll be starting with the discussion of archiving in the new office. When we talk about the new office, that means both on-premises and online deployments. We're also going to be talking about e-discovery and compliance across not just Exchange in the new office, but also SharePoint and Link. And we'll also talk about a feature called data loss prevention, which helps prevent accidental leakage of sensitive information through your email system. Out of curiosity, how many of you have already deployed Exchange 2013? Has anybody deployed it yet? A few of you, great. So let's begin by talking about archiving in the new office. And again, when we talk about the new office, it's not just the on-premises products, but it's also the online products, including Office 365. Now, when we designed archiving for the new office in mind, we had four key goals in mind. One was around the user and the administrator experience. We wanted to provide administrators with control over their messaging system without delivering features that became a burden to end users. You'll hear me use words like seamless and transparent to describe some of the work that we've done both on the administrator side and for the information worker. I'll show you what the experience looks like for both of those people in your organization. We'll also talk a little bit about data governance, and data governance refers to your controlling what messages remain in your messaging system and for how long they remain. It is a way in which you can control the lifespan of messages in your Exchange environment and control which messages get retained based on policies you create and which messages get removed from the system automatically, either based on criteria or at a certain time. We'll also talk about the features in Exchange and Exchange Online that enable immutability. Immutability is an e-discovery term that proves that messages retain their original format, retain their original properties, and remain in place throughout the discovery process with Exchange and Exchange Online. And of course, we'll talk about e-discovery itself, not just the e-discovery features that we have in Exchange, but also the office-wide e-discovery features we have across SharePoint, Link, Exchange mailboxes, and the file system as well. When we think about archiving in the new office, we can typically break it down into two categories. One is the preservation category. This controls how messages are retained in the system. This controls what sort of mailbox size the user has, and this controls the overall end user experience in terms of having a large mailbox. We'll also talk about storage management. Storage management is very important for Exchange administrators, but it's also important for end users as well. Historically, end users are used to using local file storage in the form of PST files. PST files have many disadvantages. They, for example, can contain sensitive information that can be lost or stolen. They can also be taken by employees who have been terminated, and they can be taken to your competitors. So one of the reasons to archive within Exchange, as we call it in-place archiving, is to eliminate the use of PST files and make your messaging system more secure, while at the same time giving your users access to the information they need in order to do their jobs. Now, when we talk about archiving, that can be done both on-premises and it can be done online in an Office 365 environment, but it can also be achieved through a separate service called Exchange Online Archiving. So regardless of what version of Exchange you're using and whether or not you've deployed on-premises or in the cloud, Exchange Online Archiving, for a flat fee every month, gives you unlimited archiving of your messaging data in the cloud in a protected and trusted Microsoft data center. One of the new advancements that we have in the new Office is the integration across Link and Exchange. And in particular, we now have the ability to archive Link content directly into an Exchange mailbox. Archive content can include instant messages. It can also include meetings that the Link user attended through any Link client that's available. And when it comes to searching across the archive, we have a seamless and transparent experience. So whether your users are using the Outlook client or whether they're using Outlook web app, they get the same single experience. In fact, let me show you what that experience looks like. So here I am in my Outlook 2013 client, and you can see up at the top here, I have my mailbox. This happens to be the mailbox belonging to a gentleman named Alex Darrow, and Alex Darrow is my demo account here. So you can see I not only have all the folders for my mailbox, but I also have an archive mailbox directly below that. And you can see it's called the Online Archive. I'll explain what these other folders are in a moment, but for right now, let's focus on the primary mailbox and the archive mailbox. So right within the Outlook client, I have access to both my mailboxes, my primary mailbox and my archive mailbox. The only difference between those two mailboxes is that the primary mailbox is cached down to the Outlook client in an OST file, whereas the archive mailbox is not. That's why we call it the online archive, to designate that the mailbox is always online. But I don't need to make any changes inside the Outlook client in order to switch between the two. As you can see, my focus is right now on the primary mailbox, but I can just as easily move to a folder in my online archive, and it will automatically open that online archive. And you can see the messages that are in that folder as well. Similarly, if I want to search across my mailbox, I can just go up into the search field, type in a search term like the word Falcon, which is a project I've been working on, and I can search my entire mailbox, I can search a current folder, or I can search both my entire mailbox and the archive mailbox with just one search. I don't need to go ahead and do multiple searches. So you can see, for example, some of the choices I have available. I can search an individual folder, I can search subfolders, I can search the current mailbox, which would be whatever mailbox I have selected, or I can choose to search all mailboxes, and that would include both my primary mailbox and my archive mailbox. So from an end user perspective, this is a very seamless and transparent experience. From the administrator's perspective, here we are now inside the Exchange Admin Center. This is the user interface, a web-based user interface that I would use to manage both an on-premises Exchange organization and an Office 365 organization. One tool, no need to switch. And when I'm managing recipients, you can see I get a single interface for managing both individual mailboxes and archive mailboxes. So you can see at a glance the type of mailbox that each of these users have. You see the word user, and then you see archive in parentheses to indicate that these users have both mailboxes. And I can very easily, as you can see with in-place archive here, I can very easily with a single click enable or disable an archive mailbox. So we make it very easy to enable in-place archiving in Exchange 2013. The same exact user interface would be used for Exchange Online as well. So whether you're managing Office 365 or Exchange on-premises, it's the same single tool. Now, we also talk about preservation in terms of messages, and this refers to features like in-place hold. We have both time-based holds and query-based holds. And in-place hold is something that you enable when you want to preserve immutability of your messages. In other words, you want to keep the messages as they are in your messaging system, regardless of user actions. So for instance, even if a user deletes a message, with in-place hold features, the message still remains in the system. And this, of course, allows you to do things like respond to discovery requests in a litigation, or respond to a court order or a subpoena for information, and provide all of that information from the messaging system, even though it may appear from the user's perspective that the information has been removed. So once again, this is a seamless and transparent experience where the end user may or may not have any idea that they have been placed on this in-place hold. That is up to the administrator to decide if they will notify that user. In terms of data governance, this refers to retention policies that you can create that will automatically take messages and either place them in an in-place archive at a certain date or delete them from the system at a certain date. You have total control over what policies you create and what messages, folders, and items those policies apply to. And then finally, the last area is e-discovery. And e-discovery is the mechanism you use to search across mailboxes, to search across archived link content, to search across SharePoint sites, and to search the file system for documents and messages and other files that meet your search criteria. For example, earlier I searched for the word Falcon because I was searching for information related to Project Falcon. You can do the same types of searches inside the eDiscovery Center in Exchange and inside the organization-wide eDiscovery Center in SharePoint. Now, when we talk about the reason for archiving, one of the primary reasons is so that users have large mailboxes. There is definitive value in users having at least 1 to 2 years worth of email available to them in their mailboxes at any given time. And that can be email that exists only within a primary mailbox, or it can be email that is split across a primary and an archive mailbox. The choice, again, is yours. But the benefits to the end users means that they spend less time managing their email. They spend less time using PST files, and it helps you eliminate those from your organization. It also simplifies your ability to search across mailboxes. After all, if the data is located in mailboxes and not PST files, it means the administrator can search that information from a centralized location. Now, in terms of creating the archive, that's something, as you saw earlier in the demo, that can be done very quickly. We have rapid provisioning in the system that, at a click, allow an administrator to enable or disable the archive mailbox or to modify the size of the archive mailbox if needed. In terms of location, we support a combination of primary and archive mailboxes. You could, for example, host them both on premises. You could host a primary mailbox on premises and an archive mailbox in the cloud. You could host both mailboxes in the cloud, or you could host a primary mailbox on premises and instead of a cloud-based organization, use Exchange Online Archiving for all of your archiving needs as well. Now, I mentioned it's a seamless experience. Here you can see side by side with the Outlook client and the Outlook web app client, that is it exactly the same experience, the same folder experience, the same view, the same user experience all around. And what you're seeing here is a comparison between Outlook 2013 and Outlook web app. As I also mentioned, and as you saw the searching in Outlook, Outlook web app also has seamless and integrated searching as well. For instance, you can search all of your mailboxes at once, or you can search an individual mailbox or an individual folder. And of course, when you're using Outlook Web App to search, you're using the new search foundation technology that we have in Exchange 2013. That new search technology is 35% faster than it was in Exchange 2010, both in terms of the indexing and in terms of querying. It is 35% faster. And we now use the same search technology across Office, so SharePoint uses it as well, which means that when you are doing discovery searches, SharePoint can use a federated search API to search an Exchange index. That means you don't need to re-index your data in SharePoint. SharePoint can use the index already created by Exchange. Now, in terms of data governance, as I mentioned earlier, that refers to policies that you can create that control when messages get archived or deleted. So, as an example, you can see some of these policies up here. And these are policies that can be customized. You can create any number of policies to control what happens to certain data. For instance, you may have policies for very important email that keeps it for maybe 5 or 10 years. But you may have other policies for less important email that keeps it for maybe 1 or 2 years, or maybe less. And you may have policies that take certain email and archive it, and you may have other policies that takes other email and simply deletes it after it is deemed expired. In terms of the retention policies, you have both the capabilities of creating delete and archive policies for full mailbox management. And when you create these policies, the end user experience is once again seamless and transparent. They get one drop-down menu that includes all of the policies that you have created in your organization. And so they can choose what policies apply to individual folders and to individual email messages, individual items in those folders. And you can see you have the ability to create both archive policies, which will move it to an archive mailbox, or retention policies, which can delete messages after a certain amount of time. And again, these are just example policies. You can create different policies with different spans, different time periods, all on your own. And it is a transparent user experience. The end user can be looking at these messages in Outlook and Outlook Web App, and at a glance, they can see the retention policy details. They can see, for example, that this message will be deleted automatically after 10 years. The date of this message expires, as you can see here, is December 8th, 2018. So at a glance, the end user has the ability to see when these messages will be acted on by the system, again, either archived or deleted. You can assign these policies to an entire folder, or you can assign them to individual messages and items in those folders as well. That allows you to create exceptions to policies that put end users in control, just in case there are some messages that do need to be kept longer than the folder policy dictates. Now let's talk about in-place e-discovery. We have a specific model that we derived for in-place e-discovery, and this model is designed to reduce the volume of information while at the same time increasing the relevance of the information that is returned. The primary reason for that is to give you tools that helps you minimize the amount of data that you'll be producing in response to e-discovery requests. The reason for that is simple. Generally, when you're working with e-discovery requests, attorneys are involved. And the more data that you provide to your attorney, the more expensive it becomes. So the idea is to give you tools that allow you to provide just the minimum amount of data that is necessary to comply with whatever e-discovery request is sent to your organization. Now, when we talk about organizational e-discovery, that exists in the SharePoint e-discovery portal. And this is a portal that can search across not just SharePoint sites, but also exchange mailboxes, archive link content, and the file system as well. So as an example, you can see here, we can add the sources that we want to search. These can be individual mailboxes, or they can be distribution groups if you want to search multiple mailboxes at once. And then you have additional locations, such as SharePoint sites and UNCPass for searching the file system as well. Archive link content lives in the user mailbox, so by searching a user's mailbox, you'll be searching both their Exchange messages and their archive link content. Now, in addition to doing searches, we also give you features called in-place hold. And in-place hold is there so that you can preserve messages in the system. In other words, prevent users from deleting them. And that is important because your organization may be involved in some sort of lawsuit where you're required to produce messages from your email system around a certain project or whatever the subject of the lawsuit is. And so in this example, you can see we have the ability to search for a specific keyword, and we're using a wildcard example. So we're just searching for TRAD asterisk. So we're looking perhaps for the word traders, trading, etc., something perhaps related to Northwind Traders, one of the projects that this sample company has been working on. And you can see in this sources field, we are searching several Exchange mailboxes, but we're also searching across SharePoint sites with just one single search. We have the ability to add other criteria as well, such as a start date and an end date, and an author or sender. So if you're looking for messages sent by a specific person, you can do that as well. Now, when you turn on hold, as I mentioned earlier, that preserves immutability. That keeps the messages in the system in hidden area of the user's mailbox, and it is preserved so that you can use the e-discovery tools to find that information and return it as part of an e-discovery request. And one of the benefits of the eDiscovery portal is it uses a new keyword language. It's called KQL, Keyword Query Language. And KQL includes new search features we didn't have in previous versions of Exchange. For example, the ability to do proximity searching, searching one word within a certain number of words near another word. So as an example here, we're searching for the investor near within 30 words of the word relations or finance. And again, you can construct a variety of different searches to find information very easily. Even though keyword query language is new for Exchange and SharePoint, it is very easy to learn and adopt. And as you can see, this one query is being done across the file system, it's being done across SharePoint sites, and it's being done across Exchange mailboxes. Now, one of the other features that we give you is this concept of instant statistics. So even before we return the information, we give you statistics about how many items match your search terms. And again, this allows you to refocus your search, tailor your search to further narrow down the relevance of your search. Again, it's all about reducing the volume of messages returned in the search and increasing the relevance of those searches. And of course, the in-place hold is there to help you meet regulatory requirements as well. It might be that due to certain laws or certain regulations, your organization is required to keep email messages related to certain subjects for a specific period of time. In-place hold allows you to do that without exposing you to risk through human error or human accident or by malicious deletion of those messages. So in-place hold has many different forms. We have the legacy hold that we introduced in Exchange 2010 that is called litigation hold, or sometimes called legal hold. We have the indefinite in-place hold, which basically preserves everything indefinitely. And we have both time-based in-place hold and query-based in-place hold. And time-based in-place hold obviously expires after a certain amount of time. And query-based in-place hold is based on queries that are constructed by the administrator. And the administrator can construct these queries using the Exchange Management Shell, using the Exchange Admin Center, which you saw previously, or using the SharePoint eDiscovery Center, which you saw in the screen snapshots. Now, I mentioned how we preserve immutability. We preserve it by retaining messages inside a hidden area of the user's mailbox. So when a user is placed on in-place hold, the message is still delivered to their mailbox. The user can still move the message to a different folder. The user can delete the message. They can also go into their deleted items folder and purge the message, but the message remains inside hidden folders in the system. It is searchable and recoverable by the administrator or by a discovery officer in your organization. So mailboxes that are that have in-place hold enabled automatically preserve the data in that mailbox without any user or administrator intervention. You can also audit these changes. Anytime a mailbox is enabled for in-place hold, or if in-place hold is disabled for a mailbox, that can be audited and tracked, and you can create reports that show who created the hold and when. Once again, it's all about preserving that immutability of the mailbox. Now, I mentioned link archiving. Historically, we were storing the data in two different places. In Exchange 2010 and Link 2010, we did not have a single place where we stored this information. In the new Link and the new Exchange, Exchange 2013 and Link 2013, both on premises and online, Link now has the ability to store that information inside the user's mailbox. And that means you get, again, a seamless and transparent experience for your Link archiving. When a Exchange user is placed on in-place hold, all of their Link content is also automatically captured and stored in those hidden folders in that user's mailbox. Again, in-place hold preserves the immutability and prevents the end user from accidentally or deliberately deleting that information. And that includes both instant messaging and meeting content, so any meetings that they attend. And that is any meetings that they attend through any client. So whether they use a regular PC client or the web-based client or even the mobile client on your phone, all of that information, all of the instant messages, and all of that meeting content can be captured and archived into their mailbox. Now, let's talk about data loss prevention. This is the last area I want to discuss. And data loss prevention is particularly important because any of you who are messaging administrators constantly face security threats against your messaging system. And that includes not just the accidental loss of sensitive data, that also includes things like viruses and spam and malware and other unwanted messages. But there is a huge problem with accidental leakage of sensitive information. In fact, quite recently, in New Zealand, one of their public government companies accidentally had 83,000 credit card names, addresses, and other personal information about their employees leaked via their email system. This was one of the largest breaches in New Zealand history. And this just happened just a few weeks ago. So what are some of the ways that you can prevent against this? Well, one way is to stop the viruses and malware from entering your organization in the first place. Okay, and that can be done a number of ways. That can be done using the built-in anti-spam and anti-malware protection that comes with Exchange 2013 on-premises. You can also use Exchange Online Protection to protect your organization's messages in the cloud. That actually is a very good idea because it allows your messages to be cleaned and inspected out on the internet before they come to your organization, thereby saving valuable computing resources for your organization. And you can use, of course, the built-in protection that we have with Exchange Online for both a cloud-based and hybrid deployment as well. Another feature that we have is that feature called data loss prevention that scans email messages and uses deep content analysis to look for sensitive information and prevent that information from leaving your organization. And you also have the ability to add on protective measures such as rights management services that will automatically encrypt your messages, thus allowing only the intended receivers to open them and read them. Now, one of the features in Exchange 2013 that we have is this concept of giving you control over your own policies. You get to create policies that determine what information is sensitive and what information can be safely transmitted via email. You also get to create policies that control the behavior of what happens when those messages are detected. For instance, those messages could be issued a warning and allowed to go through the system. Those messages could be sent to a moderator for approval for transmission. Or those messages could be blocked and reported to an administrator as potential violations of company policy. We give you the tools within Exchange to control what level of enforcement you want for these messages. Maybe you want to just alert somebody. Maybe you want to encrypt messages. Maybe you want to allow users to override policies and send messages. Or maybe you want to block them altogether and prevent them from leaving your organization. So one of the ways that you can do that is by using transport rules. Now, transport rules are not new in Exchange 2013, but we do have some new features and new options for transport rules. If you're not familiar with transport rules, they are very similar to Outlook rules. These are rules that are created by an administrator that can look at things like the from field or the to field or the subject or the body of the message or attachments to a message, and then they can take action based on what they find in those fields. For instance, they may reroute messages, or they may send messages to a moderator for approval, or they may block messages from being transported. They can also allow exceptions so that if certain messages should be allowed to pass through unevaluated, they can still do that. Now, transport rules use conditions such as who the sender is, who the recipient is, what the subject is, what's in the body. And then they use actions after that to determine what they should do with the message when one of those conditions is met. Should they block the message? Should they add recipients to the message? Should they journal the message? Should they encrypt the message automatically with rights management services? And then exceptions can be based on the sender, the recipient, the body, and other criteria related to the message as well. We have new transport rule options that we didn't have in previous versions of Exchange. These include things like allowing rules to run for a specific time frame. This is helpful if you are facing a message storm. If someone is, for instance, sending a bunch of unwanted messages in your environment repeatedly, you can use time-based transport rules to stop that behavior. We also have new filters that include things like the message size or the IP address of the sending server. And we have new actions that allow you to control routing of the message or to force TLS and encryption on that message during transport. Now, data loss prevention is based on transport rules, but it is so much more than that. Data loss prevention is there to identify, monitor, and protect your sensitive data through deep content analysis of both the message and the attachment itself. So DLP is really several features. It includes policy tips that can be displayed in Outlook 2013 that notify a user before they send the message that the message contains sensitive information that should not be emailed. We also have DLP both in the on-premises product and in Exchange Online in Office 365. And out of the box, we include pre-designed templates to help you quickly create DLP policies to protect information in your organization. And these predefined templates also include predefined sensitive content types, things like credit cards, debit cards, passports, driver's license numbers, and other personally identifiable information. We also support the downloading of and importing of third-party DLP templates as well. We have a number of partners in the financial, government, and other industries that create DLP templates that can be used with Exchange on-premises and Exchange Online. And we have full administration of DLP inside the Exchange Admin Center. And Exchange Online also includes rich reporting for data loss prevention policies as well. So I mentioned the policy tips inside Outlook 2013. Now, DLP has the ability to block messages regardless of what client the user is using. But if they happen to be using Outlook 2013, we could display these policy tips inside Outlook and let them know, for example, that in this case, the message contains a credit card number that should not be transmitted via email. And I'll actually demonstrate this live for you in a moment. In terms of DLP policy templates, again, these are built-in templates that are based on common data protection regulations. So things related to securing financial data, regulations around securing health data, and other personally identifiable information. But templates are there just as a convenience. You can create your own DLP policies from scratch as well. You don't need to use the built-in templates if you don't want to, and I'll show you how to do that in a moment. The templates are there, though, to help you meet specific regulatory objectives. These templates have been designed specifically against regulations in a variety of geographic regions that are there to protect you from transmitting this kind of information through your email system in an unwanted fashion. We can detect a variety of sensitive data, as I mentioned earlier, including things like banking information, driver's license information, credit card and debit card information, bank accounts related to people and corporations, and other sensitive information. Now, DLP policy rules, as I mentioned earlier, are based on transport rules. Technically, it was possible to create DLP policies in previous versions, but you didn't have features like DLP policy tips that show up in Outlook 2013, and you didn't have the reporting that we had in Exchange Online. But again, because they're based on transport rules, just like transport rules, DLP policies use conditions, actions, and exceptions. So they're very familiar and very easy to create if you've worked with transport rules in previous versions of Exchange. and you can apply granular usage restrictions. You may, for a variety of reasons, have a legitimate need to email sensitive information around. For example, perhaps you work for a bank or a hospital or a government agency, and you need to transmit this information. You can have the system automatically encrypt that information using rights management services on premises with Active Directory, or by using rights management in Exchange Online with Windows Azure Active Directory rights management services. And in fact, this link at the bottom of this slide will take you right to the page on how to configure Windows Azure RMS for Exchange Online. All right, so let me show you how data loss prevention actually works here. So first, let me show you the end user experience. So going back to my Outlook client here, you can see this is Outlook 2013. I am connected to an Exchange server. I'm going to create a new email message. I'm just going to choose a user randomly from the address list. And I'm going to try to send that user a credit card number, and we'll see what happens. So we'll just call this Tech Days. Excuse me, so I can see what I'm typing here. Yes, don't laugh. This will happen to all of you one day. Just didn't think so quickly. Okay, so Tech Days test, and I'll make this larger in a moment so you can see what I've typed here. I'm just going to type in, here's the credit card info. And I'm going to pretend I have a Visa credit card. And no need to write this down. This is not a real credit card number, but the system will think it is, so it will stop this. And we'll just say that expires on this 14th. I'll say enjoy here. Okay, so let me zoom in so you can see what we've done. So what I've done here is already I have a policy configured on the server, in my case in Exchange Online. And this policy is designed to automatically scan messages for credit card info and then display a policy tip when that credit card info is detected. So right now it's actually communicating in the background with the Exchange Online server. Now what I've typed in here, you can see this 4111111, all this long series of ones here. This is a credit card number that we use for testing purposes, and you can use this same number to test this in your environment as well. And this is a fictitious number that, even though it's not real, still uses the same general credit card algorithm to go ahead and pretend to be a credit card. And then, of course, I've got the expiration date in there. You can use any expiration date in here. Now, assuming I have network connectivity, which I should, it should be communicating with the server, and it should be displaying a mail tip here, but it's not doing that, so we're going to come back to that. And we're going to see what it looks like on the server side. So on the server side, again, this is just using the Exchange Admin Center with Office 365. And I go over here and I choose Data Loss Prevention. And for Data Loss Prevention, you can see I have just one policy here. The policy is called PCI-credit card, and you can see this mode over here is set to enforcing. That means that it is turned on. Now over here you can see under policy mode I have three choices. One is enforcing. That means it's turned on and working. Another is test without policy tips, and the third option is test with policy tips. So you have the ability to actually test these policies before you turn them on and start enforcing them. Now, whether you choose with or without policy tips simply depends on whether or not you're using Outlook 2013. Outlook 2013 is the only client that displays those policy tips. The message can still be blocked inside of Outlook Web App or Outlook 2010 or Outlook 2007, but only Outlook 2013 will actually display the policy tip. Now, I'm going to go in here and show you what this policy tip looks like. So I'm clicking on edit, and then I'm going to choose rules here. And I'll make this bigger. And so now you can see there are two rules that I have. One is for external recipients, one is for internal recipients. Now, this is just an example showing you that you can create different rules for different recipients. I could have just created one rule and covered both recipients if I wanted to. But here I've got two different rules, one for internal and one for external recipients. So now I'm just going to edit one of them, so that you can see the actual rules that are involved. So here now we're looking for messages that are sent by anyone inside the organization. You can see apply this rule if the recipient is located inside the organization. The message contains sensitive information, and that sensitive information has been defined as a credit card number. And I can actually click on credit card number, and you can see me edit that, and I can choose not only the sensitive information type, but also the number of times it must appear before the rule is triggered. So if I wanted to stop one credit card number, I could just have a minimum of one. If I wanted to stop a whole spreadsheet of them, I could put in whatever number I thought might be sent. Now, I can also add additional sensitive information types. So you can see, once again, the types that we're talking about, things like banking routing numbers, medical account numbers, driver's license numbers, tax numbers, anything that could be personally identifiable or sensitive information. But in this case, I've chosen credit card numbers, which is, as you can see, a predefined sensitive information type. So it's not like you have to type in every single credit card number that you want to block. You put in the type of information and we block that type. Okay, continuing to look at this rule, you can see when this condition is found, we are to do the following. Notify the sender with a policy tip. And the policy tip is configured to block the message, but allow the sender to override it. What that means is we're giving control back to the user. We're letting the user know that this message violates policy, but we're giving the user the ability to override that policy and allow the message to be sent. Of course, the administrator had to configure this to make that possible. And then if the user does overwrite that, then that will generate an incident report and send it, in this case, to Dennis Dehan with custom content. And that content will include things like who the message was from, the name of the policy that it violated, what sensitive information was found that violated the policy, and so forth. I'll show you an example of one of those reports in a moment. And then there's also auditing and enforcement as well. And as I mentioned earlier, you can make this time-based. It doesn't have to be on at all times. If you want to limit the times during which this is on, you can do that as well. Okay, so that's what the rule looks like behind the scenes. Let's go back to our client here. And for some reason, we've lost the text on the message. That's interesting. Seems to have gone white on me. There it is. Okay, and so the policy tip is actually not appearing. You can see up here, this is saying no mail tips apply, but that is actually not true. There is a mail tip that should apply. So let's try a new message and see if we can get this to work here. Alex, we'll type in tech days, and all right, now we'll give that a second to go to the server and see if there's a mail tip for that, which there should be. Let me also make sure that mail tips are set to show at all times. Yes, display at all times, okay. Okay, and there we go. Okay, so you can see now up at the top, there's this policy tip that just appeared. And it says, this message may contain sensitive information. Your organization won't allow this message to be sent. And it says, Alex Darrow, who is the recipient here, is not authorized to receive this mail. To send this message, you must override your organization's policy. So the experience is something like this. If I don't override the policy, and I just click send, I get this other message. And this other message says, your organization won't allow this message to be sent because it contains unauthorized recipients. And again, that's anybody inside or outside the organization we should not be sending credit card numbers to. So I can't send it unless I override the policy. And that is what this link right here does. If I click on override, now you can see the policy tip has changed. Now it says you have overridden your organization's policy for sensitive content in this message. Your action will be audited by your organization, which means now I have the ability to click send and send the message. But in doing so, that's going to cause a report to be generated and sent to the administrator to let them know that somebody overrode the policy. Okay, so that is what DLP looks like from the end user experience. And again, you saw what it looks like here from the administrator experience when you're creating those policies. And again, I sent that message to myself, so it just arrived here because I was able to override the policy and have it delivered. Now, as I mentioned, we have pre-built DLP templates. So when you're creating a new DLP policy, you can create a new one from a template, or you can import a DLP policy, again, from Microsoft or a third-party vendor, or you can create a new custom DLP policy, which basically is starting from scratch with nothing. So I'm going to show you how to create one from a template, because that is the easiest way to create the policy. So again, I'm just going to call this Tech Days Test, and we'll call this Demo of DLP. And in this case, I'm looking for some form of sensitive information. I'm going to say that I'm looking for information related to the PCI data security standard. So this particular security standard is the standard that covers things like, again, credit card and debit card information. So what this means is by using this template, I can immediately prevent credit cards from being sent via email. Now, under More Options, right away, I have the option to enforce it or test it with or without policy tips. I'm just going to go ahead and say Enforce right away, and I'll click Save. And now it's actually creating the new DLP policy for my organization right now. And this is an Exchange Online organization, so it's creating it up in Office 365 in the cloud right now. But that is really all I need to do at this point. Because I've created the policy, and because the policy I configured to enforce, it is now turned on by default for my entire organization, and credit cards would be blocked from being transmitted via email. And we'll come back to this in a moment. Now, I mentioned the auditing and the incident report. So when a user clicks override, as you saw me do, and sends the message, as you also saw me do, it's at that point that the auditing is enabled and the incident report is transmitted to the administrator or to whoever you specified when you created the policy. And this incident report includes things like the severity of the of the message. In other words, how much sensitive information was found. It also tells us whether or not the message was overwritten by the user and whether or not this was reported by the end user as a false positive, something else that we give users the ability to do. We also include information such as the sensitive data classification information. This tells us what type of data was discovered. As you can see here, in this case, it was a credit card. And in this case, one credit card was found with a confidence level of 85%. You can also see things like the rule details. So this was a rule monitoring for financial data that would be sent to an outside user. And you can also see the information, the sensitive information down here at the bottom that was matched. In this case, it was a credit card number. In this case, the one that begins with the five. And again, you have full control over what information is included in this report. This is showing you everything, the message ID, the sender, the recipient, the policy, the sensitive information, and so forth. If you wanted to, you could include less information if you didn't, for example, want to transmit the credit card numbers to your administrator. And then, as you can see, this message report has an attachment at the top called travel information. That is, in fact, the original message that was caught by this DLP policy. So we include the original message as an attachment to the report as well. Now, one thing that you get from Exchange Online that we don't have on premises is reporting around your DLP policies. Specifically, as you're seeing here, these are Exchange Online reports showing the effectiveness of your DLP policies. For instance, at a glance, you can see with this table, for the PCI policy, there were 165 detections, 150 overrides, and 10 false positives. So that means this particular policy caught 165 different potential violations. 150 of those were overridden by the end user, again, simply by clicking that override link and then clicking send. We make it easy for the users to do that. And then 10 were reported by the users as false positives. Things that looked like they violated the policy, where in fact they did not. Now, in terms of protecting your communications, it's not just about, as I mentioned, the anti-spam and antivirus that we included. It's also enforcing policies through things like data loss prevention and protecting messages or simply blocking them from leaving your organization. And you can see with the simplified management, mainly the unified administration using the Exchange Admin Center, we give you one single tool to manage all these different levels of protection. So again, going back to the Exchange Admin Center, you can see here now is that policy that I just created. This now applies and is enforced. And you can see here we also, through compliance management, have one single user interface for in-place hold and e-discovery. And for other protection aspects, such as built-in malware, built-in connection filtering, built-in content filtering, controlling outbound spam, and controlling email quarantine as well. All of this is built into Exchange, and there's no need to acquire any additional software or use any extra tools. All right. So with that, archiving, compliance, and e-discovery have been enhanced and integrated all across Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. You can quickly search across your SharePoint sites, your Exchange mailboxes, your archived Link content, and the file system using one set of built-in tools inside the new office. And in-place features enable seamless and transparent control over your compliance needs. And the features that you saw, like data loss prevention, help reduce leakage of sensitive content via your email system. All right. And with that, we do have a few minutes to take some questions, and I'm happy to answer as many as you have. And I do also have some lovely gifts for those of you who are brave enough to ask questions. I know it can be difficult, particularly if English is not your native language, but I will do my best to answer any questions that you might have. And to give you incentive, some of these prizes are pretty cool. This is an actual telephone handset you can plug into your other phone and pretend that it's the 1970s all over again. So those are nice little Link handsets here. They're called Coco Phones, retro handsets. Yes, yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't have a question. I just have some suggestions. My organization already implemented the exchange 2013. But every time I check on the exchange blog, and every time when they release the wrong update or subtext, it always breaks something. Can you next time just do more testing before the release?
Sure. That is a very fair and expected question. So for those of you who didn't hear the question was that their organization has already deployed Exchange 2013, and you stay on top of the Exchange team blog, and you've noticed that we've had a pattern lately of having to recall updates because of bugs or other problems that they created when you installed them. And you've asked us to do better testing so that when we do ship products, they don't break your email, basically. I agree completely with you 100%. We have had a very bad record lately of releasing updates for both Exchange 2013 and Exchange 2010. And we have taken steps to improve our testing, to improve the validation that we do both inside of Office 365 and in our own test environments. And the reality is only time will tell if we're going to be successful in bringing quality back to our updates. I hope that we are, but only time will tell. And your comment is very fair, and I will take that back to the team. And I think it deserves a gift. Not a bribe, a gift. And so you can have your choice of either a phone or one of these lovely dark sweatshirts.
I would just the blue phone.
You would like the blue phone. Excellent choice. Thank you. Okay. Yes, in the back.
One question. Can we filter the image object like photos or picture with the Exchange? New Exchange.
Ah, that's a great question. Can you filter images using the built-in filtering capabilities that we have? So we can do indexing of images, but we cannot do filtering of direct images themselves. We don't have any technology in Exchange that can look at an image and tell you what it is, and therefore whether or not it can be filtered. We can filter by certain attachments and attachment types, but the contents of an image we would not be able to filter against. Thank you for that question. And, please, I'm going to choose one of these.
Phone.
Phone? Okay. The phones are gone. But that's okay. We've got these lovely sweatshirts here, one in medium size, one in large size. And about 5 minutes left to go. Yes, sir. Can we filter the voice? The voice data. You mean like a voicemail message? Yes. So you can create transport rules that can act on voicemail messages as well. And in fact, the system does certain things already based on what a user does when they leave a voicemail. For example, if someone marks a voicemail as private, that can be encrypted automatically. And the voicemail transcript can be skipped or not skipped depending on your security needs. Now, in terms of searching across voicemail messages,
we would be searching across the transcript that would appear in the message body that was sent with the voicemail. We would not be searching against the voicemail audio file itself, the MP3 or the WMA file, for example. But if you have voicemail transcription turned on, then the voicemail should be transcribed in the body of the message, and we can search and index that. Yes, yes. And would you like medium or large? Medium. All right. Still got time for plenty of questions. We still have one more sweatshirt. Because if there's anything somebody needs out in that heat and humidity, it's a dark black sweatshirt. It's very hot here. Well, all right. Well, I want to thank you. Oh, we have one right here. Yes. Yes, so what version of Office? Yes, the features that I've showed you today would require Office Professional Pro Plus, and that can be for an on-premises deployment, or that can be for an Exchange Online deployment as well. And some of the other features I showed you, like for instance data loss prevention, that also does require a certain level of plan in Exchange Online, and an enterprise CAL if you're deploying that on premises. All right, so please don't forget to fill out your surveys. Thank you all very much for coming. And I hope to see you tomorrow at my session on Exchange 2013, High Availability and Site Resilience. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day.